excellent day for an exorcism.
I understand, all right. You're one of the undead, and I'm a werewolf.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Hey, Nancy. No running in the hallway.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Horror Crypt Podcast, episode number 78. And this is completely and utterly not possible. When I say not possible, I didn't mean to do this deliberately at all. We have got back-to-back Stephen King movies. Now, last week we did Cujo, and this week we have done a little-known movie that, you know, a lot of people haven't heard of, and they really should, because this is a really great movie. This is, well, put it this way, Stephen King happened to be rather in interesting times of his life when he was writing and, you know, his books and stuff like that. And as we said last week, it was completely by accident that he wrote and submitted Cujo, because he was in, shall we say, some very questionable things that he was doing. Well, this time he wrote another movie and he thought to himself, nope, I'm going to not only write this one, but I'm going to direct it as well. And he also throws himself as a little cameo in there as well. So we're going to be doing today the 1986 horror sci-fi movie Maximum Overdrive. Now, if you've never heard of it, it's okay. It's completely fine. You can actually find this one on YouTube. It's ad-free. It's not subtitled. It's not dubbed. It's from beginning to end. No problems at all. Now, it stars Emilio Estevez, who looks throughout this movie like he has been badly sunburned, and it looked like his eyes look like he's been up for about 6 months. It's all bloodshot and stuff like that. And it also happens to be starring, well, when I say starring, it's like a supportive role, the voice of Lisa Simpson. Yes, of The Simpsons. Yes, she is in there. It's, I think it's Yardley Smith that she's actually in here as well. Other, you know, we've got another, you know, other actors in there, but those are really the two standout ones. Now, when I'm going to play the trailer, I'm going to play two trailers this time. One is without Stephen King's little commentary, and one with it. And I'm telling you, the one that he does with himself directing this trailer, very, very interesting, to say the least. But look, remember, before we get started, I'm on all social media, Facebook at HorrorCryptOz, and you can send me a direct message, HorrorCrypt2022@gmail.com. And remember, as I said last week, this is basically for Spotify listeners only, unfortunately, but every week I put a question up on the next episode that I do. And you can then click on that and you can answer the question that's up there. And it's just a different way of getting to know the audience and getting some feedback from you guys and also interacting, which is a great way to keep this podcast going. I mean, this podcast is not going to stop anytime soon. And also remember, I also have the podcast, Horror Crypt Podcast baseball caps. They're available for $30 Australian. So if you want one, just get in contact with me and we can certainly set you up with one of those. You'll be looking very, very cool throughout your neighborhood wearing one of those. I guarantee it. But before we get started, we're going to listen to the trailer. We're going to listen to two trailers today. So sit back and relax, because here comes Maximum Overdrive.
What in the dickens going on around here?
Who was driving it?
I don't know.
I just want to get the hell out of here.
Please don't let me in the dark.
Help me.
You're going to get us in an awful lot of trouble, man.
We already in trouble.
Maximum terror.
Jesus coming and he is...
Maximum King.
Maybe tomorrow will be our world again.
Dino De Laurentiis presents Stephen King's Maximum Overdrive.
Hi. My name is Stephen King. I've written several motion pictures,
But I want to tell you about a movie called Maximum Overdrive, which is the first one I've directed.
Wow.
What in the dickens is going on around here?
A lot of people have directed Stephen King novels and stories. And I finally decided if you want something done right, you ought to do it yourself.
And who was driving it?
I don't know.
It was my first picture as a director, and you know something? I sort of enjoyed it.
What is going on?
I don't know!
I just wanted someone to do Stephen King right.
You want a war? You got one.
I just want to get the hell out of here.
So come and spend some time with me and my friends at the Dixie Boy. Spend some time in the dark.
Please don't let me in the dark.
Help me.
I'm going to scare the hell out of you. And that's a promise.
You're going to get us in an awful lot of trouble, man.
We already in trouble.
Maximum terror.
Jesus coming and he is.
Maximum king.
Maybe tomorrow will be our world again.
Dino De Laurentiis presents Stephen King's Maximum Overdrive.
So the movie opens up with reading, and funny enough, the end of the movie is going to finish with reading as well, but the reading starts on this one as the opening credits start, and it says that on June 19th, 1987, at 9:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Earth passed into the extraordinarily diffused tail of Rhea M, a rogue comet. According to astronomical calculations, the planet would remain in the tail of the comet for the next 8 days, 5 hours, 29 minutes, and 23 seconds. I like how the fact that they actually really get down to the very nitty-gritty of 23 seconds. I don't think there's going to be that sort of situation. You sit there and go, well, we were only in there for 22 and a half seconds. What the hell's going on? But so then the movie then transitions into Wilmington, North Carolina. And you know when you're walking towards an ATM machine, you know, if it's near a bank, they might have like a digital screen that's maybe flashing the weather or might be flashing some advertisement that you want to see. Well, it's flashing 79 degrees out. But all of a sudden, it actually flashes into the words, fuck and you, and fuck and you, and it just keeps flashing. Now, nobody pays attention to it, and to be very honest with you, if I'm ever walking to the bank, and it's got a digital sign, 10 times out of 10, I'm not even watching what the digital sign says. But as we're walking, we actually, you're just completely oblivious, but over the top of this sign, you know, over the top of the bank, it says, fuck you. Which I think is really, really cool. And we suddenly see a bank client who's walking towards the ATM machine. This happens to be Stephen King in a cameo. And a very interesting thing happens when he goes to put his card into the ATM.
Honey, come on over here, sugar buns. This machine just called me an asshole.
Now, what I will say is if you guys do not like AC/DC, then please don't watch this movie, because from the beginning to end, it is nothing but AC/DC songs. Now, listen, AC/DC is Australian. I'm happy that they are Australian, but the actual soundtrack of this movie, I mean, you really think to yourself that maybe Stephen King was really into a drug addict state, because if he literally sat there and thought, this is a great idea, I'm going to just load this movie up with AC/DC. I mean, it is wall to wall, and this is the transition from, you know, this you know, asshole situation that we hear the beginnings of an AC/DC song, and we're basically watching the town's drawbridge, and there's a couple of people, you know, that actually are working inside the drawbridge, an elderly bridge keeper and his dim-witted assistant, and he is dim-witted beyond belief. But, you know, you're just basically seeing cars going backwards and forwards, and then, you know, when it transitions to the inside of the drawbridge, we suddenly see that the computer panels are starting to turn themselves on. And all of a sudden, the bridge starts to raise. Now, usually when the bridge is going to raise, the boom gates go down, it flashes red, to indicate that there is going to be a ship or a, you know, a boat passing underneath it, we have to raise the bridge. Well, this is doing it by itself. Now, obviously, at some stage, you know, Stephen King wanted something to do with AC/DC other than the goddamn music. So he obviously couldn't get the rights to actually have an official van. So he painted up a black, I guess, just like a black van, and put AC/DC, you know, logo on the side of the van, and a couple of idiots driving the van. But, you know, as the bridge is going up, we see a truck, and he's actually caught between one side of the bridge and the other side of the bridge. But it's not going up to a point where he couldn't get out of the truck and escape. But he opens the truck, sees that there's, you know, the bridge is going up, and you know, he opens the door to get out of the truck, and then he goes, yeah, better not. Stays in the truck, which is like, are you an idiot? And of course, as the bridge is going up further, the truck then basically nosedives into the water. One of the best kills, oh my god, one of the best scenes in this movie, is the fact that as the bridge is going up, the cars are starting to slide down. And there was one car that went straight into another car, and the passenger went through the windshield. That was awesome. And I think it was a female that went through the passenger window. Not saying it's awesome because it was a girl, but it just looked awesome the way they did it. A lot of the trucks are flying off the bridge. People are sliding off. So basically, these two, you know, the drawbridge attendants basically come out and go, you know, that this couldn't happen because, you know, the boom gates were already up. They have to come down to actually have this happen. But they've got really no idea what the hell's going on. So with everything going on and we're hearing the music of AC/DC, we now transition to the Dixie Boy truck stop, where we're watching a awesome-looking truck heading towards the Dixie Boy. Now, this truck is very much like... the only thing I can say is the Green Goblin. And I think that is what the picture or the front of the truck is. It's like the green goblin. It's the mask of the Green Goblin. Now, there is something painted on the side of the truck, and I found this to be very, very interesting, and I want everyone to put their dirty minds away, because as soon as I say it, you're going to sit there and go, uh-huh. But this is what says on the side of the truck. Happy Toys, here comes another load of joy. Now, if anyone sits there and has any bad ideas or any bad thoughts about that, well, that's on you. That's not on me. But as far as I'm concerned, hey, you know, you can sort of read into that little spiel on the side of the truck. But yes, it's another load of joy. So we go inside and we're basically seeing a short order cook, and we meet the short order cook by the name of Bill Robinson, which is Emilio Estevez. Now, Emilio Estevez looks like he's been in the sun for 6 months, and he hasn't slept for 6 months. His eyes are bloodshot. He's red. It is just, it's either very, very bad makeup artistry, or he was in the middle of doing something he shouldn't be doing either. But of course, you know, he's working the grill, and his boss, Mr. Hendershaw, wants him to come into the office and basically speak to him about a little scenario that he's got that he's cooked up, and he wants to see if Bill's really down to, you know, down for the situation.
I gotta wipe everybody's ass around here. Shitty job, but I reckon somebody's gotta do it. Ain't that right, Bubba?
No, let me get this straight now. Now, you want me to work for 9 hours and only clock in for 8?
Now, I know you bit the college boy.
Screw that. Not this kid.
You know what that star means, don't you? You ain't that obtuse, are you? On parole, boy. Either your ass belongs to me or it belongs to the state of North Carolina.
So you can really see that Bill's really stuck between a rock and a hard place, because he is on parole, and you know, if you know, Mr. Hendershaw decides to be a complete prick, which he already is doing now, he could very well send Bill back to prison. So basically, he has to agree. But of course, as you know, Bill was going into the office, he got one of the waitresses just to watch the grill for him, you know, as far as the bacon and the eggs going, and she is making an absolute mess of things. But of course, as she's, you know, doing her thing and trying to get Bill's attention to come back into the kitchen, we've got an electric carving knife that happens to be sitting on her left-hand side, and of course, the carving knife then moves over and attacks her and basically cuts her arm rather badly. And of course, this is when Bill comes in and grabs a hammer and bashes the shit out of the carving knife. And of course, one of the, you know, patrons goes, "Oh, what happened, sweet thing? Did, you know, what did this the knife get you?" And she says, "Well, yeah, it just turned on and it bit me." And it's like, oh, okay, here we go. It's starting, but we don't really know what's going on yet, because it could be just a fault, because this is what Bill said, you know, it could be just, you know, a fault of the machine. So we also go outside, and of course, when the Dixie Boy has the regulars coming through, as I said, the guy who was driving the Happy Toys Green Goblin truck by the name of Handy, he basically pulls up in his and he says to Duncan Keller, who happens to be the diesel mechanic there, whether he could just fill the truck up because he's going to go and get some coffee and get some, you know, get some breakfast. So he just wants to do that. And of course, he's like, oh, okay. So, you know, there's Duncan and he's sitting, you know, basically on the side of the truck, just, you know, filling up the tank. Of course, the nozzle suddenly switches off. And so, you know, you think to yourself, oh, did I fill it up? Is it completely full? So Duncan does tap the machine to see if it actually is working. And no, it looks like it's being turned off. It's just not working. Now, what's the one thing that we always are told not to do? Don't look down the nozzle of something that is dangerous. But of course, unfortunately, Duncan looks down the nozzle of the diesel. And of course, suddenly it squirts him in the eyes, temporarily blinding him. Now, when I say temporary blinding him, it just blasts him in the face with diesel. And so, you know, there's a couple of guys by the name of Steve and Joe. They have to, you know, attend to him. Of course, then we transition from that into the inside of the Dixie Boy. And there's in the games room, a would-be thief is stealing change from the video machines. And, you know, as he's doing this, he's, of course, you know, there's coffee cups flying all over the place. Because the whole thing about this movie, it's very, very fast-paced. It's not a situation you're going to sit there and go, wow, is this movie actually going to get going? It's very, very fast-paced as we go along. So there's this thief. We don't know who the hell he is, but anyway, he's, you know, loading up his pockets of cigarettes, and he's loading his pockets up of change and things like that, and there's coffee, you know, cups being thrown all over the place. And at one stage, he goes over and he grabs a hold of one of the video game machines, and he suddenly gets electrocuted by a huge surge of electricity. We don't know how that happened, but of course, we have to deal with it, so we have poor old an employee that Mr. Hendershot just happens to grab and goes, here's an idea. You need to go there and attend to him, take the body out and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, really? This is rather fun. But Mr. Hendershot is running one hell of a very, very shonky business. So the movie then transitions over to a baseball field where we're actually watching a junior league baseball game. And of course, the winning coach wants to buy sodas for his team. Now, this is really quite cool. I liked this, and I liked the scene, and it, when you do watch it, and as I said, go onto YouTube, watch it, it's free, it's, you know, but, you know, you will see the steamroller scene, and my first thought is how and why it's happening, but it is an awesome scene that you get to see. So basically, the coach goes over to begin with, and he puts money into the soda machine, and of course, presses the button, and nothing comes out. So he's standing there. And then, of course, a soda can flies out and hits him square in the nuts, which drops him to the ground. Another one hits him square in the chest. And then the third one, as his head's going down, slams him straight into the head, killing him instantly. And it's like, oh, okay. The machine then spits more cans at the players who run from the field, which is really cool because, you know, they are really flying. And they've got a couple of kids in the back, so I don't know what the stunts, you know, how much the stunts were and what the scenario was to do this, but it was just awesome the way they were actually, all the Coke cans were firing all over the place. So one of the players, Deke, a catcher, quickly puts on a catcher's mask over his face when several cans fly towards him. Now, this is where I don't understand this part of the movie. I don't think anyone will understand this. Now, we all understand that steamrollers go really, really slow. Now, I don't care if they are being controlled by a higher power, they still go really slow. My next question is, why would it be so close to a baseball field? The third one is that the steamroller breaks through the scoreboard, and of course, one of the kids was running away from, you know, all the carnage that was going on, and slips and falls, and the steamroller runs over one of the young players. And basically, you can just see the kid actually being rolled over with the steamroller, and then a trail of blood around it. Deke notices that the steamroller has no driver. He mounts his bicycle and races off. Now, this is really cool because he also goes through his town. And of course, as he's riding through, you've got the sprinklers that actually start, you know, obviously they water your lawn, as we all know. But as he's riding past every sprinkler, the sprinkler turns on to the point where he gets to the end of his street, turns around and looks, and all the sprinklers have turned off. You also get to see a person that's been electrocuted by their Walkman. Well, I don't know if anyone actually remembers a Walkman. For the younger viewers or the younger listeners that are watching this, it was a little it was probably about the same size of an iPhone, but, you know, say turn it onto its side, and it had a place where you could put cassettes. If you don't know what cassettes are, please look it up on your information superhighway. And you'd put cassettes in there, and you'd press play, and of course you put your headphones on, and you'd listen to music. Well, this is what happened to someone who was sitting on their porch listening to some music. They got electrocuted. Now, there's also a really cool scene where a dog had gone and grabbed a little toy car. It was a police toy car, and he was electrocuted. And, of course, the dog still got the toy car into his mouth, and the siren and the lights are still going on this thing, on the toy car. So, really, you know, you also get to hear a news report saying that, you know, machines all over the world are going crazy and unplug this and unplug that. So you'd really think to yourself that whether the machines are actually controlling at that stage the radio station, or they could be controlling the radio station, because, you know, if obviously it's a machine, so it will stop you from transmitting any information with regards to what's going on. So there's a couple little scenarios there that you sit there and go, don't know if that really worked or not, but, you know, we don't know. So on a deserted freeway, we actually now transition from Deke over to a freeway, and a female hitchhiker named Brett is riding with a very, very grubby little person. He's actually a Bible salesman. Now, I'm not saying that all Bible salesmen are bad. I'm not saying that at all. But this one is very much along the lines of very handsy, you know, trying to touch. And he really does. He touches her leg and whatever. And she does tell him on a couple of occasions, you know, if you don't get your hands off me, you'll be basically wiping your ass with a stump. You know, so he's really got the idea of like, oh, okay, fair enough, it's all right. But trying to get a signal in the car, she briefly overhears a vague news announcement of a garbled and static broadcast speaking of an unexplained event being reported, as well as about the local microwave facilities being inoperative. So a lot of the stuff that's actually happening around the world with microwave technology is all being basically shut down by the machines. They're all just... So this is almost like Terminator part... Well, this is almost like the original Terminator, where you can really think to yourself, this is Terminator, but on the road with trucks and vehicles and everything electrical, you know. So Brett basically is driving along with this very lecherous salesman, and she sees the Dixie Boy truck stop and basically grabs a hold of the steering wheel and pulls the car into the Dixie Boy. They argue over this when... And, you know, they're arguing in front of it, and he's saying, you know, I go out of my way to, you know, give you a ride, and you've been this and that. And he's really going to town on her. But, of course, Brett sort of, like, looks past him and sees the happy toy truck starting by itself while, of course, you know, one of the guys who was supposed to be refueling up the truck, basically it moves a short distance, breaks the fuel line, and, of course, basically... At that moment, Brett grabs a hold of the Bible salesman and pulls him out of the way as basically the truck goes past them and parks about 100 meters away. So now we find out really that there is something really going on. And of course, this is when Billy decides, well, I'm going to go and check this whole stuff out. And so he goes into the cab and finds that there was nobody in the cab at all. No one was driving. And even the truck driver said, well, he must have been a hot wire expert, because how did he do that without my keys? You know, I've got my keys here. How did he hot wire the truck? This is pretty cool. So, you know, we really find that this is going to start to get out of control very, very quickly. So in town, Duncan's son, Deke, sees that so many people are being killed in their homes by machine. He hears another garbled broadcast about the machines all over the world coming to life and killing people. One of them is a blood-splattered runaway lawnmower. And it's really cool because, you know, like he is, like at one stage, Deke hides from an ice cream truck. And it's almost like it's doing a patrol around the neighborhood to find unsuspecting kids or unsuspecting people. So it's doing this patrolling circle. And of course, so Deke hides in some bushes. And of course, as he's hiding there, the ice cream van goes past him, so he grabs hold of his bicycle, ready to start riding, and then all of a sudden, this lawnmower springs to life that's got blood and guts all over it, and starts chasing him. So you can think to yourself that it's not going to get very far, because the lawnmower is very slow, where a kid riding a bicycle is very, very fast. So the chase really doesn't happen all that well, and even to the point where at one stage, you know, Deke is on the highway and he sees a plane fly overhead. And of course, the plane's being flown by absolutely nobody. But it's just one of those little things that I actually had to add into the movie. But the fact that he rides away with his lawnmower chasing him is really quite cool. Now, from that scene, we transition onto another back road, and we find a ditzy redneck newlywed couple, Kurt and Connie Yardley Smith. She makes her appearance, are driving towards their honeymoon destination, and of course, her husband Kurt says something rather interesting to her along the way.
We gotta get some gas.
That's good, because I got to go to the ladies.
Can I come in and watch?
No, you cannot come in and watch.
Ouch. Shoot.
Rather interesting thing to say to your wife, but hey, whatever you want to do. So, of course, they pull into a local garage to find some petrol or some gas, and they find the mechanic dead, and a tow truck starts up and trying to run them down. Kurt manages to duck back out of the way and jumps into the car, and Kurt and Connie then speed away trying to get out of the way of these trucks. Of course, then at this stage, they also get ambushed on the road with a truck going the opposite direction, and basically turns around and comes after them and slams into the back of their car. So they're being menaced on the highway with this huge bloody truck following them. And of course, at that stage, they manage to turn left and then right. And of course, the truck goes left, goes off an embankment and explodes. I don't know how it exploded, and I don't know how it caught on fire, because it was just going to go down a small embankment. But of course, the special effects was it had to blow up. So, we go with it and go, yes. Now, it was really interesting on the trailer when Stephen King says, "I'm going to scare the hell out of you." Here's a hot tip, and there's not scary. This movie is not scary at all. I would very much doubt if anyone would sit there and go, "Paul, that was a scary horror movie." It's not a scary horror movie. It is just a fun, mindless, sit around, watch movie for, an hour and a half, but it's not scary at all. So back at the Dixie Boy, Duncan attempts to leave to look for his son despite protests from Bill and the threats from Hendershot, implying that Duncan is also an ex-con and that Hendershot is exploiting his background for his own gain. But of course, he basically says, this is the guy Duncan who's got diesel in his eyes. And of course, Bill does say to him, how many fingers do you see? 2, 3, 4? And he goes, "Okay, so I got a little bit of double vision, but I got to go out there. The whole world is falling apart. I got to go find my boy." And this is what Hendershot basically says, "Listen, if you don't clock out, you'll never have to clock out again." And he goes, and of course, Duncan's like, "Fine, I don't give a shit, fat fuck. Just leave me the fuck alone. I'm going out to find my son." So of course, as he's walking towards his car, he drops, his keys. And of course, we look up to see a truck basically plows into him and kills him. And so it's like, "Oh, okay, fair enough. This is gonna start happening. We can't get out of here," because at that stage, all the trucks start to turn on, and they make a huge semicircle around the Dixie Boy, just running continuously. So there's no way out of there without getting attacked, and there's really no way in there that's without, you're basically going to get in a whole lot of trouble. It's at this stage also that we transition over to the very creepy Bible salesman, Camp Lohman, and he is sitting there trying to get a sale out of a customer and the really, really nice waitress when one of the trucks goes through and slams and destroys his vehicle. So he runs out to insult the driver, only to realize that no one is driving the truck. He basically is standing there, you're really cursing out the truck, and he doesn't see the Happy Toy truck start up again. Now, the Happy Toy truck is the one that basically runs the whole show. So he's basically the boss of everyone. So he commands all the trucks to go into a semicircle, as I said. But at this stage, when this guy is really letting one of the trucks have it, because he thinks that someone's driving it, the Happy Toy truck starts up and chases Lohman a short distance and backs up into him, sending him flying and landing in a nearby ditch. So, of course, then we also have that Hendershot has actually told Steve and Handy to basically drag Duncan's dead body back inside, and Hendershot orders them to place them in the basement where the dead body, the video game player, is also in there. And of course, as they're dragging the poor guy in there, Hendershot's like, don't drip blood all over my nice clean floor, get it downstairs. So it's not even like this person's a human being, it's just like, don't drip blood all over my floor. So now we find out that phones and the CB radio is now out of order, and of course this is why we start to see that the trucks are now forming a semicircle, are basically around the entire complex, making sure that no one gets in and no one gets out. So we are now back on the deserted highway, and of course, Curtis and Connie, I should say, basically find that we are now pulling up to the Dixie Boy and sees that there might be a chance to actually get in there. So they're basically, you know, they're basically parked across the road, and Curtis is basically saying to Connie, listen, do you see that short gap? There's a gap between this truck and that truck. So when that this next one comes around in the next motion, I'm going to go straight through and basically punch a hole straight through in there to get into the Dixie Boy. And she's like, well, what? So we can be in there with them? And he says, well, what do you think is going to happen if we stay out here? Of course, Connie does do the old, well, I am scared. And I completely understand that, because she's basically putting her trust in her husband to drive her through this truck blockade. But of course, unfortunately, it doesn't, you know, come off as well as they were thinking, because as they were going through that little hole, one of the trucks accelerated and crashed into the car, rolled the car. And of course, you know, the car's now upside down. Of course, at this stage, it's Billy and one of the people come out to try and rescue Connie and Curtis out of the car. And of course, as they're running back towards the Dixie Boy, Hendershot walks out with a M72 anti-tank rocket launcher and blows up two of the trucks with an anti-tank and the anti-tank rockets saving them. It's like, holy shit, because, you know, it's really interesting, because as they're running back, you know, you can see that Hendershot's there with this rocket launcher, and they fire, and everyone just basically hits the ground as the rocket flies over the top of their head and blows up the truck. So a little bit later, Bill asks Joe, who is one of the poor old assistants that Hendershot has basically roped in to do his dirty work, about the weapons that Hendershot had in his basement. Bill and Brett, now remember, Brett is the young lady who was the girl that was hitchhiking. They go down into the cellar and discover a huge stash of weapons, ranging from assault rifles to rocket launchers to grenades. Hendershot appears and threatens to send Bill back to prison for snooping around, but Bill arms himself and warns Hendershot not to interfere with him. Bill confides in Brett about his criminal past, about robbing a grocery store and his predicament, and that Hendershot doesn't seem to take anything seriously. So of course, now as night starts to fall, we basically see that the power in the truck stop goes out as the trucks continue circling the building, and Brett notices a bright green light covering the sky and deducts that the passing comet is responsible for this. Of course, Bill suggests a rather unorthodox way of looking at things and a way that they could get out of this situation, but he has to actually ask Brett, you know, what she thinks first.
Can you sail?
A little. Hobby cats and things like that.
Good deal. You know, I used to crew the big ones. Sailboats, no motors.
No motors?
Mm-mm.
Where would we go?
I'm thinking about this place called Haven. Now, it's an island about 6 miles off the coast. And there aren't any motor vehicles allowed on the place. None whatsoever.
None?
Mm-mm.
You know, you are not only a hero, you are a genius.
So, of course, we all figure out that the fact that the trucks are continuously running, the next morning most of the trucks have stalled and are running out of gas. So, however, two more trucks arrive, and one is a very large bulldozer, and the other one is a small military vehicle with an M60 machine gun mounted. So, of course, Deke has made it back into the little boy. He's made it back into the Dixie Boy. And, of course, at one stage, you start to hear the beep, 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 ba, ba, ba. And it's basically Morse code. And he has actually taken Morse code to get his merit badge in Scouts and found out that it's a thing that they want. They want people to start refueling them. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's going to be interesting with no power. Then, of course, all of a sudden, all the power comes back on. And it's at this stage that, you know, we're also seeing that, you know, Wanda is sitting there having some drinks with a couple of the regular patrons, and says to the guys, you know, this is just not fair. And you can see that she's been drinking quite a lot. So she starts to get very belligerent and very aggressive to what's going on with where she is and her surroundings and what's happening around the world.
The whole goddamn world's going tits up.
They can't. They can't.
Now look, honey, you gone and hurt yourself. Now come on, sweet thing.
Don't you sweet thing me!
No wonder you, baby. Just
they can't. We made them.
do! Where's your sense of loyalty, you Yuki thing?
We made you!
We made you! Oh, we made you!
So call it overacting, call it whatever you will, but I think that's a little bit over the top with her screaming at the trucks. So, of course, when the bulldozer crashes into the building, Hendershot, despite the protest from Bill, fires a rocket at it, temporarily disabling it. As a result, and of course this is the whole thing that happens, the military vehicle opens fires on the Dixie Boy, because it's an M60 machine gun. In the storm of bullets, Hendershot, Wanda, the lady that was screaming about, "We made you," and three of the truck drivers are fatally gunned down. Then the military vehicle begins beeping its horn again in Morse code, which Deke once again translates and says that someone must pump fuel. Nobody will be harmed as long as the fuel is being pumped. So I was like, oh, okay, here we go. So then the power from the is being turned on for the building, and Bill decides to turn on the pumps despite Brett's protest to not trust the trucks. So Bill points out that they have to be within the military vehicle's presence. So it's basically like the military vehicle is sitting there, and Bill says to Brett, "Listen, see that little one? So, all the other guys are basically all the workers, but see that little one just sitting there? Well, there's nothing to stop that little one from calling in a bunch of napalm and basically hosing down the place. So basically, we have to do exactly what this little thing says and what the trucks want." So we have another AC/DC song, which we have all through this bloody movie, that now we're at refilling up all the trucks. Of course, as we keep going, the degrees are going up. I think it's about 102 degrees outside. And exhausted by the hard work and the heat, Bill retires to rest with Brett, and because he's just absolutely exhausted. Of course, at this stage, Bill points out a possible explanation for these events as being a race of aliens using the comet to wipe out humanity and having the machines make them do all the work for them as slaves. It's like, okay, yep, we'll go with that. So Handy tells Bill about working on an escape where they will get out through the basement to a drainage pipe outside. So it's like, okay, we can't stay in here forever. We've got to go as soon as we possibly can. So sometime later, Bill walks outside where he talks to the truck driver, filling up the trucks, where he drops a grenade into the small military vehicle, destroying it. So he basically walks over and he's just talking to me. And of course, the military vehicle starts pointing the machine gun at Bill. And he's like, hey, just chill out, calm down. I'm just talking to him. It's got nothing to do with you. Just leave it alone. Of course, then he says to the guy, run. And he spins the machine gun around, drops the grenade, and of course, absolutely, explodes. So it's like, oh, right. So with that, all the refueling trucks begin circling the Dixie Boy once again. So we're like, okay, this is really going to get out of control right now. So at nightfall, Bill, Brett, Deke, Curtis, Connie, and the rest of the survivors escape through the drainage pipe armed with various weapons from the late Hendershot's arsenal and decide to make a run for the open ocean to the island where there are no trucks. When the trucks see that the people inside the Dixie Boy are gone, they will smash into the building, destroying it in a series of spectacular explosions. I must admit, the explosions are really cool in this movie. They really do shake the ground. Of course, Bill leads the survivors across the back roads in the fields to the area to make, basically to the marina, where they find a sailboat to take them to the island. Of course, they have narrow encounter with numerous machines, including a driverless ice cream truck, which actually Curtis actually shoots with a machine gun. Once again, I don't know why it explodes in a huge ball of flame and basically does a flip towards him, but it's cool. So hey, whatever floats your boat. So there's a guy in the group named Brad, and he is running with the rest of the group. But you see that there's a woman who's been killed by her car, and her arm is hanging out the window, and she's got a very, very, very large diamond ring on her finger. So greed takes over instead of survival, and he goes to try and take the diamond ring off this woman. Of course, as he's running towards the rest of the group, he's run down by the Green Goblin truck again, and he's killed. So Bill runs from the docks and quickly destroys the Happy Truck, the Happy Toys truck, with a rocket launcher. Don't know where it came from, but he was holding it and he fired it and it explodes. So in the final shot, Brett, Bill, and the rest of the dozen survivors sail away from the marina to find help and safety. There is reading at the end of the movie, and this is the disclaimer that they have at the end of the movie, and I personally think that if they had have started with this, or actually shown you this part of the movie, it would have been friggin' awesome. So as I said, the end of the movie starts, it finishes exactly like the start of the movie, with reading. Now, if this disclaimer had have shown people, it would have been absolutely awesome, but this is the disclaimer, and if you sit there and shake your head and scratch your head trying to work out what the hell this movie was about, I can't help you. But this disclaimer reads, 2 days after, a large UFO was destroyed in space by a Russian, in inverted commas, weather satellite, which happened to be equipped with a laser cannon and a Class 5 nuclear missile. Approximately 6 days later, the Earth passed beyond the tail of the Wren M, exactly as predicted. The survivors of the Dixie Boy are still survivors. The movie fades to black. And that is the end of Maximum Overdrive. Now, hands up, who wants to see that UFO exploded in space by a weather satellite who just happens to have a nuclear missile on board? That would have been awesome to see. First of all, why was there a UFO? Second of all, why was there a weather satellite with a nuclear weapon? And who put it up there? Why did they know this was going to happen? There are so many scenarios about this movie that I still sit here to this day scratching my head and trying to actually understand what the hell was going on at the end of the movie. But the fact is that it ends exactly the way it starts, with lots of reading. So, you know. But look, I think this movie, for what it's worth, and I know it's you know, there are a lot of people that sit there and go, I've never even heard of this movie. Well, you know, as a kid of the 80s and 90s, you end up by finding a lot of shit in the video stores, but I actually gravitated towards this simply because of the Green Goblin truck face on the front cover of the video cassette. So that's what actually drew me to this movie. So when I sat there and went, oh, okay, I mean, I didn't have to understand it, because quite frankly, I didn't understand it at that stage. But you know what? As I said, it's just fun for fun's sake, and it's something to sit there and go, okay, all right, I've seen it, you know. But I think that the fact that, Stephen King always puts a cameo of himself in any movie he does. But when he said, you know, I'm going to scare the hell out of you, he didn't scare the hell out of me. It's not scary. It's fun and it's enjoyable, but it's definitely not scary. But look, 0 to 5 buckets of blood. 0 being how do I get the last 2 hours of my life back? To 5, it was a perfect movie and I'd watch it all over again. If you even think that I am possibly going to give this 5 out of 5, you're dreaming. I will give it a... Oh, God, this is going to be an interesting one. I'll give it a 3 out of 5. You know why I can't give it 5 out of 5? Because as much as I like AC/DC, I don't want to hear the entire music score of AC/DC. I don't want to hear every song in their catalogue, basically. So I'll give it a 3 because it was fun, it was enjoyable. But I'm not giving it a 5 or a 4 out of 5 because I'm sick to death by the end of this movie to hear AC/DC songs. So that's why I'm not giving it. But 3 out of 5 is middle ground. I'll go with that one. Look, before we go, we have to do Paul's Fun Facts. So as usual, I'm absolutely astounded. There are so many trivia for this movie. There's actually 48, but the first two are absolutely awesome. So the first one was, when asked why he hasn't directed a movie since Maximum Overdrive, Stephen King responded, just watch Maximum Overdrive. So this gives you an idea of how bad it really was, unfortunately. Stephen King, being a former cocaine addict, later admitted that he was coked out of my mind the entire time he was making this picture and often didn't know what he was doing. He remarked that he'd like to try directing again someday, this time sober. Oh, that's awesome. So while shooting the scene where the steamroller rampages across the baseball diamond, Stephen King requested that the special effects department place a bag of fake blood near the dummy of the young player, who would be run over by it. The desired effect would be that the smear of blood would appear on the steamroller and be re-smeared on the grass over and over again, like a printing press. While filming the scene, however, the bag of blood exploded too soon and sprayed everywhere, making it appear as if the boy's head had also exploded. King was absolutely thrilled with the result, but the censors demanded the shot be cut. But you can see the shot. You can see it on YouTube. They do have it up there in its full glory, so you can actually see what actually had happened. So the Dixie Boy truck stop was constructed 10 miles out of Wilmington, North Carolina. It was so convincing that several truckers tried to stop in it, and eventually the producers had to put an announcement in the local paper saying that the Dixie Boy was just a movie set. Just a couple more before we finish off this podcast. So it's been long rumored that George A. Romero actually ghost-directed a large portion of the film while King was seeking treatment for his cocaine addiction. See, and it's very well known that he was coked out of his mind, as we know. Many fans of Romero's work have noticed that the film features many of his distance camera angles and editing choices. While King has never admitted this up front, he has mentioned that Romero was constantly on set and King would frequently ask him for advice about directing. So it's like, there we go. There may be some truth in that one. And just finally, several of the radio-controlled trucks used for the Dixie Boy siege broke down throughout the filming, which delayed production every time a truck would break down. It would get repaired, but of course another truck would break down also. So there was always one truck being fixed. Okay, it's all fixed. And where we go for the shot? Oh, the other one's broken down. Okay, we've got to go and fix that one. So it was a whole mess of stuff that was going on this production. So you can almost imagine how the hell this movie was ever able to be filmed. It was also really ridiculous, but I have to just throw this one in, that originally Stephen King wanted to cast Bruce Springsteen in the lead role as Billy. Can you believe that one? I'm sorry. This is what cocaine must be, one hell of a drug if you can do this sort of shit to you, that you think Bruce Springsteen would be a really great choice as a movie actor. I don't know. Anyway, that's Maximum Overdrive. That is the podcast for this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I love watching this movie, but I won't be revisiting this for quite some time, so it's all good. Remember, you can contact me, horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Facebook at horrorcryptoz, and you can get a baseball cap for $30 Australian. And you can wear that around the place with pride, knowing that you're supporting me as the content creator. But you can also directly reach out to me. There's always going to be a little question that I always put up on, on Spotify for you guys to answer questions. But you can just message me directly at horrorcrypt2022, that's 2022@gmail.com, and just tell me where you are in the world, and I'll even give you a shout out here on the Horror Crypt podcast. Yes, I will. But anyway, thank you very much again for coming to visit me, and until next week, I will say, like I always say, I'll creep you later.
Notice the problem?
In the backyard with my uncle.
In the backyard with your uncle?
Yes, when he comes over to visit, we like to go out in the backyard, throw it around for a while.
And what did you and your uncle find out?
Oh, I can't keep up with him. Mine hurt, especially on the long ones. I can't seem to straighten it out. It has no feeling. It's kind of numb. I may have yanked it too much, maybe.